most people think. Okay, hello and welcome to episode 3 of the podcast, What Most People Think. If this is the first time you're listening, thank you for joining us. It's a show about, I don't know, an old-fashioned thing that what the majority of people think should maybe be the thing that happens. But I don't know, some of you might say that's how fascism starts. I don't know. But anyway, look, we're going to try and look at these kind of issues in a playful way. I'd just like to say thank you to everybody that gave me positive feedback for the new microphone last week. But obviously, the sound nerds were out again about the popping. Was the popping a problem for you? Was it pulling your plonker? So yeah, I'm aware that I've got popping issues. These are lots of things that I never knew about myself until I started doing a podcast. But I haven't managed to get that sorted out this week, but I will try and get that sorted out in the fullness of time. Again, thank you to everybody buying tour tickets. There's a few of them. If you want to come to Guildford, then get in there. It's not a massive room. I probably shouldn't do that. I should hype it more, shouldn't I? So it's close to selling out and it's a massive room. It's not, basically. It's the size of a canteen. I've got today, a lot of people ask me about having guests on the show. And the problem is because I don't live in London where all the talent is, darling. All the talent, you know, Crouch End, that sort of thing. Totally outside of the liberal bubble out here in Cambridgeshire. Did you say Cambridgeshire? Yeah, well, not that bit of Cambridgeshire, all right? This is, don't go getting images of me on it, like sitting punting my way to fucking work down a river. It's not quite that bit. Having said that, I have got a guest for you today. Oh boy. That's the first time I've ever said oh boy out loud. I've got Andrew Doyle. Andrew Doyle. Now, if you don't know Andrew, he's a brilliant stand-up. He's a brilliant writer. He writes for the Jonathan Pye character. But also, he is the cruel patriarch earning money out of internet satirical sensation Titania McGrath. Now, if you don't know about Titania McGrath, first thing, pause this podcast now, get on that account, have a look at it, see what you think, and then you're going to get a lot more out of the chat that we have. Very excited about that. So Andrew will then be sitting in. We'll talk about Titania. Andrew will be sitting in with me, and we'll be talking about what's happening with Brexit, obviously, and John Bercow, another little mischievous move by the Bercow. I'm really glad that Brexit is so, you know, he's finding the whole process so entertaining. I'm really glad that this huge attempt to change the way that we're governed is an opportunity for him to really enforce the Bercow brand. I mean, we might not get like a democratic outcome to this, but John Bercow's definitely got a catchphrase out of it, and he'll probably be the new Judge Rinder. So good for him. We will be looking at Christchurch as well on a more serious note. We might make some jokes. I'm sure they're not going to be at the expense of what happened. But I suppose we'll be looking at the media reaction to that, because it did seem to end up in a bit of a shit fight between various commentators and journalists. And then obviously a bit of bollocks. This week I'll be talking with Andrew about all these subjects, and I'll be asking him about the issue of people taking your phone off you when you just hand it to them or you just show one thing. I think it's a big deal, but I'm going to find out where Andrew sits on this. And before we get into it, so we're going to get into the chat with Andrew. That's going to be the most part of the show. I will be doing the men's health bit at the end, because people have said such nice things about that. I wouldn't want to go an episode. I mean, some of you, I don't want to think that maybe I'm stopping people from, topping themselves. But I'd like to think that this podcast saves lives. I don't think that's overstretching it. So I will be doing that at the end of the show, so sit tight for that. And before we get into the chat with Andrew, just a couple of thank yous and fuck yous. Thank you to the person at KFC that just mistakenly put in an extra bit of chicken. The thing about that is I had no guilt about eating it, because it was chicken from heaven. It was brilliant. I've downsized. I still love KFC. I still have it twice a week, minimum. It's odd that I make a commitment to something like that. But I've downsized. You know, as you get older, it gets harder to lose these pounds. So I've downsized from a three-piece variety meal to a three-piece meal. Now I'm down to a basic two-piece chicken Colonel's meal. But the other day, somebody just put an extra piece of chicken in, and that was very enjoyable. Fuck you to... I've had a bit of trolling on Twitter this week, and annoyingly, it's been pretty funny. Well, not annoyingly, I kind of admire it. There's one person that said that usually he would listen to Radio 5 Live while Pienaar's Politics was on with his dog, but he said his dog deserves better than me, than listening to me, which I found quite funny. Another thank you. Thank you to Laura Koonsberg. Regular listeners to this podcast will know that I am influencing events at Westminster quite heavily. And she referred to what a lot of people call a people's vote, a lot of people call a second referendum. I've been saying it should be called another referendum because it won't be the last. And she referred to that in a text. So thank you, Laura, for acknowledging my Whitehall acumen. On the other hand, fuck you to Donald Tusk, who used the word rethink, right? So episode 2 of my podcast, I spoke about Owen Smith talking about another vote being the opportunity for the public to have a rethink. You get outside there, have a little rethink about what you did. So the moment that an extension is discussed, Donald Tusk says, yeah, the British public might it'd be an opportunity for them to have a long rethink. I don't know what fucking, I don't know how to do that accent. Is that Polish? He's Polish, isn't he? I don't know what the, it's an opportunity for the British public. That's, I know that's Dutch, right? But the problem is the Polish, I don't know what that accent is exactly. And you, that's not racist. It's just that, well, the main reason you know about accents is through films, isn't it? Through films and television shows. And I would argue, you know, the American accent, they've done a lot of work getting it out and about. Even the Danish with the crime thrillers. So if there's any Polish people feeling offended that I didn't fully nail that accent, then, well, you need to really, you know, you need to start commissioning some better better films and programmes. It's on you. Look, let's crack on with the chat with Andrew. As I say, I'll be back at the end with the men's health bit. Hope you enjoy the show. So, one of the things in doing this podcast was I didn't want to just have any old guests on because, you know, there is that podcast circuit and there's a lot of great podcasts with funny people on. But I just thought I wanted to bring people, hopefully if they're interested in my comedy, they might be interested in people that are doing things a little bit differently. And to that end, very excited that the first guest on the What Most People Think podcast is Andrew Doyle. Welcome to the show.
Hello. Pleased to be here.
Why am I adopting this weird presenter
voice? Because that's what you have to do. It's like when I used to work in a call centre. Yeah. I ended up adopting this really camp, hello, how can I help you? I don't know why, because you just feel like you have to.
I was drifting towards Capital Radio there, wasn't I?
It was good.
It was all right. It was functional. First, I've got to apologise. Is that I sent you to the wrong place to do this?
You did, but that's all right. It's part of the challenge.
Because I went to we're recording this at where my agency is, the agent that represents me, and I sent you to their old agency. But actually, it sort of feels like, you know, in those sort of films where terrorists abduct people and put bags over their head, then they drive left, right. I kind of wanted to disorient you.
I felt more like Challenge Annika. That was my point of reference. So that shows the difference between our...
See, listeners to this podcast will appreciate an early Challenge Annika reference.
I think so. I hope so.
There's been a lot of stuff about cricket.
Sounds like they're over 30. I'll probably get that.
How old are you, Andrew?
I'm 40.
40. Okay. I thought we were roughly similar.
Yeah.
So I'm 42. So you are, Andrew Doyle, a brilliant stand-up, and you're also the disgusting patriarch behind Titania McGrath.
Yeah. Vile.
Vile. Profiting, profiting off her work and her... I love that.
The Guardian said it was a speedy cash-in. I love that. It's like, are you trying to embody what I'm satirising or what? Because, I mean, this assumption that they know what I'm trying to do. Yeah, so she is a Twitter character. So, and I have to keep reminding myself that a lot of people just aren't on Twitter. So why would they know? She's a character on Twitter who is a satire of the kind of young, white female, typically very posh, very privileged, activist, sort of fourth wave feminist activist, intersectionalist activist, who goes online to find things to be offended about and detects sort of finds offence where there is none to be taken, really. And there's a lot of these people who are like this. A lot of them write for The Guardian, so you probably recognise this type of person. But they are typically privileged and they're very narcissistic. I think what links them all is that they always make it about themselves. Yeah. And I think it's just very funny. I think just anyone standing there and telling the masses how they should be behaving in this very prim way is inherently funny, even if they're right.
It is, isn't it? Because it's the moment, like, you put, it's something funny about putting yourself on a moral pedestal.
Yeah.
It's like, that's the comedy is all about the distance that you can fall. And if you're essentially saying, I'm a better person than you,
yeah,
there's scope for comedy.
Exactly. I mean, look, I'm probably guilty of it myself. In fact, I definitely am, like, because I write sort of political articles where I say what I think about the world. But I do always try, and I often fail, no doubt, but I do always try to acknowledge in some way that this is just my view and I could be wrong and all that sort of stuff. Because what really bothers me about a lot of these activists is the certainty that they have in their own worldview. And
I'm so jealous of that in a way. I think that on one level I take issue with it.
Yeah.
But I think maybe sometimes I wonder if why I take issue is because I'm not certain about anything.
Well, you shouldn't be.
Do you know what I mean? Like, imagine... I think I have some really strong hunches.
Yeah, but that's it. I'm just trying to get behind a hunch.
But also, you wouldn't be the comic you are if you didn't doubt yourself all the time. If you didn't think over your material and think, "Well, is that going to work?" You know, I find it frightening, that kind of like, and this is why I always sort of equate the social justice movement as it is to a cult, because it is that complete certainty and it is faith based. You know, they believe in these sort of invisible power structures, which I'm not saying it doesn't exist, but what I'm saying is they have a complete certainty and belief that it dominates absolutely everything we do. And of course, power is relevant, but it's not everything. It doesn't explain everything.
So at this point, if I've got any left-wing people, and the great twist about all of this, of course, is that you are left-wing.
Yeah.
You know, as such. Yeah. I mean,
you're
a sort of splinter cell. I think we sort of both are, in a way. That's what I think that makes it interesting. We've both sort of been rejected by our own side to a point. You know?
I mean, I'm told so often that I'm right-wing or alt-right or whatever, which by the way means white nationalist, so I can definitely rule that one out. But right-wing, and I always say the same thing, you know, okay, so what are my beliefs that are right-wing?
Yeah.
And the only things people can come up with are things they imagine I secretly think, rather than things I've actually written or actually said. And that gets us nowhere. Like, you know, unless we're going to live in a society where everyone claims telepathy, but we're not going to get anywhere like that. So
I think the thing is, though, Andrew, it's that they're threatened, do you know what I mean, by you? Because it's a big challenge, isn't it? Someone who's a clear, and not to blow too much smoke up your arse, but like a clear, very funny...
No, I need the
political thinker. I mean, on that note as well, I mean, this is a crass analogy to make, but you're also a gay man as well. Is that fair to say?
It's fair to say.
And I realise there's a good pause there. Yeah. Is that only because I mentioned blowing smoke up your arse?
Yeah.
We haven't discussed the fee for this. But
you've hit on my fetish, though.
But I guess the reason I bring that up is because that's another challenge, isn't it? Because they probably want to think that you're this straight, like you say, alt-right, cis male, and you're not.
It's funny because I got, like, so when the book came out and I did a couple of interviews about it, a lot of the aggressive tweets, and I know it's not reflective of real life, it's just a few dicks on Twitter, but a lot of it was about, oh, look at this straight white male coming out here. I had public school, straight white male, right wing. I'm like, I went to a comp school. I'm not right wing. I'm not straight.
I had that once when I did a Facebook advertising campaign a few years ago, and I just drifted into like the wrong timelines and stuff. And the amount of you Tory boy, just go and spend your trust fund and stuff. And I was like starting to be annoyed that. I thought, I wish I were fucking had as
it'd be
much
great
money as you think I did.
Do you know what? I wouldn't be ashamed of it. I'd fucking love that. It'd be great to have a bit more money, you know. But it's funny that they've got their narrative, they've got their simplistic worldview, and anything that they don't want nuance, right? Because nuance is difficult, because then you have to think about stuff and you have to discuss things. So it's much easier to just mischaracterize. One guy actually tweeted and he described what my act is. Now, he obviously hasn't seen my act. He says, Andrew Doyle comes out to the mic and he says, "Queers, eh?" And everyone applauds.
Yeah,
and it's like, what, do you,
okay. That would be funny though.
But I mentioned this to you the other day, and it's like that is actually funny.
It is funny,
but yeah, I'm going to try.
Well, we mentioned it. We mentioned just before we started recording was like a lot of people say things like, "Well, that's about as funny as like an orphanage catching fire." Yeah. And you go, "Well, that is quite funny." like you know, if your life has already been that shit,
and then
you're in an orphanage that catches fire.
Yeah.
You go, "That's funny," and then it's, "Oh, that's about as funny as a prolapsed rectum." It goes, "Sorry, both those words are funny."
The words
again, for prolapsed rectum, that's fucking hilarious.
It's I can totally take that point. But
we both get this. I get added to lists as well. Yeah. They go, "Some weird idiot on Twitter has added you to a list," like called racist.
I had one today, Nazi fascists, which strikes me as a tautology, but okay. But that's what I am apparently. So, but that's quite, again, all of this, I think you just got to laugh at it. That was my point, is that, you know, I've had it before with stuff I've done in the past with Jonathan Pye and stuff, and the articles I write for Spiked. And ultimately, you just gotta, it's not serious, it's not real life. This is not serious political discussion. This is basically pointing to the infantilization of our culture. Like, we're in a culture where everything must be reduced and simplified and caricatured. I think that's the main problem, is that each side of the political divide is just caricaturing their opponent until they're arguing against someone that doesn't really exist.
I think, like, because you've got the book out, haven't you? It's called Woke, right? Like,
yeah, A Guide to Social Justice.
And it's smashing it, it's doing really well. And I think, and I mean this, like, in a positive way, I think you're continuing a lineage of comedy that sort of satirises. You're just doing it in a different format, satirising a certain kind of person. So I was trying to think back, and I think, in a way, the young ones, we get this real, like, temporary mind-lossing in this country, where we think things are everything's new and everything's awful and it's the first time it's happening. But you look at like those characters and they're essentially taking right on students of the time and for the most part taking the piss.
Yeah, I don't claim to be...
I don't mean that it's not original, but I just think like you've it's sort of dipping into a great tradition of looking at kind of like the moral certainty of the young.
Exactly. Yeah. So any kind of moral certainty is always up for ridicule. I mean, going right back to the Puritans or the Pharisees, you know, these people are essentially funny. And what is so weird to me is like a figure like Mary Whitehouse, who would sort of epitomise this type of person back in the 80s, you know, and everyone mocked her, and you had the Mary Whitehouse experience, of course, which took her name for their show. She's won, you know, she's now... her philosophy has won out. Like, her philosophy is this idea that, you know, basically popular entertainment can change the masses and can make them behave badly, and that's why you need to regulate them, because she doesn't trust people. Basically, she doesn't trust the working classes. That was what the philosophy was. And that's now won out. That's what people now actually think. And whereas that used to come from the right, that used to come from the Daily Mail, Daily Express back in the 90s, now it's coming from The Guardian, now it's coming from The Independent. And the left have sort of seized this... And they don't know how stupid they look. They look so prissy, and
but do you feel let down by the left in a way?
Yeah, horribly. I think it's on a number of issues, but mostly it's this thing about identity politics. The left have sort of grasped onto this identity politics as being a good thing, and it's not. It's a terrible thing for our society. It's really divisive. It's this insistence on seeing everyone through the prism of race, sexuality,
and
gender.
Literally the opposite of like in the 90s of what we were asked and rightly led to do, which is just. So now you would get taken the piss out of you if you said, I don't see colour. That would be offensive to say that. Whereas actually, in 1992, you'd have been the most liberal visionary on the council estate. Well, like, actually, Jeff, he doesn't see colour. Well, he starts out like fucking white Nelson Mandela.
Well, surely that's the goal, isn't it? I mean, one of the...
Used to be. And so those things exist on the one hand.
Yeah.
But it doesn't mean on the other hand that everything needs to be viewed through the prism of race.
Exactly. I mean, I think there's a case to be made there. I think Renée Edo-Lodge wrote a book, you know, Why I'm No Longer Talking to White People About Race, which on the whole I found lots of issues and problems with. But one of the good points she makes is exactly that about you know, people applying to jobs and the statistics.
Yeah, I mean, that always resonated with me, because I think, I bet you any money it happens.
There are racist twats out there. Like, I think there are, you know, that no one's denying that they exist. But you see, this thing being applied broadly with these huge brushstrokes is not helpful to anyone. I mean, let's take the BBC. The BBC... advertising internships for non-whites only. Okay, with what ultimately ends up happening, of course, is you end up with a lot of kind of very middle class, very privileged people, BAME people in those roles. So that isn't helping anyone at all. And are the BBC really saying that they are staffed by racists? Because I bet that's not a problem at the BBC. I don't think the BBC.
Yeah, I suppose there is.
It might be a problem in other companies. But why is the BBC sort of conceding and saying that they're staffed by racists? I wouldn't want to do that.
We can't be trusted, us. Like, you know, we seem nice, but God, we despise them.
Why would they say that about
themselves? Need to legislate against our... No, you're right, I never thought about it like that. Also, the other thing that occurred to me then was why I'm no longer talking to white people about race.
Yeah.
Probably bought mainly by white people, that book.
Oh, I'm sure, yeah. Well, who knows?
But come on, I mean, that's a genius marketing ploy, isn't it?
I mean, it's like
saying Yorkies, not for girls.
I mean, this is...
Who then bought Yorkies, girls?
It's really funny, that, by the way, that whole effort. Anyway, there was an article called White Women Are Evil, or Why Women, and that was in the Huffington Post.
Some of them are, but like, you know...
Some of them are, well, yeah, my relationship. Some are, exactly, because again, you go down to individuals. But they turn on... You're not intersectional enough. You're not... I love this idea that they've already established that it's impossible to be racist if you're a person of colour.
Yeah.
So what happens when, say, a Latino person attacks a black person? Well, that's called colourism. So then they have to invent a new word to describe someone, because they've already said that can't be the case. So it's funny.
Why women are evil is funny.
That's quite a headline, isn't it?
But that's the thing. This is why Titania exists, isn't it? Because that's what she would say.
She would say white women are evil. She would say that she doesn't count because she doesn't identify as white, because she's polyracial. It's all word games.
Polyracial does sound like another character.
Yeah, it does. Like a drag name.
Like, there's got to be at some point with this where someone's going to ask you to bring her to life. Do you know what I mean? Not like you'd maybe personally, although that would be the ultimate insult to Titania if you played her.
Oh, no. We're talking about the idea of a live show with her, in which case what I'd do is get an actor.
Mm.
And what I'd love is like some sort of young... actor who's not known, you know, someone who can do the comedic it's really going to be hard to cast if we do it, but that's exactly what I want to do, you know. I think that'd be really fun.
Well, I think it's brilliant, man, and it's interesting to chat about it. And like I say, we'll move on to discussing Brexit and stuff like that in a second, but I would say to people, is like, you have got stand-up stuff on I mean, you had it. I remember you had a run at Edinburgh a few years ago, and you.
Yeah, I haven't got much online though. I've done.
No, there weren't that many clips. No. The ones that are there are absolutely fantastic and really, really whet the appetite. So I hope to see like more of that going up there, and I'm sure that you'll be doing, you know, more of that yourself.
Yeah, I will. I think I'll put more clips because I've done quite a few shows now, and I think I may as well start clipping them. I was always a bit nervous about that. You know, I was always like, oh, I don't want people seeing my material. They might. Then I can't use it again. But come on, I mean, who's
going to see it? It's fucking Wild West out there, mate.
Oh yeah, well, there's that as well. Yeah.
So I'm doing a free podcast, mate. I never thought I'd be doing that a few years ago. But yeah, okay, that's the opening section of the chat. Now we're going to get on to talking about Brexit. Okay, so I mean, I've got a left leaning leave photo here. So just before we get into the nuts and bolts of exactly what's happening with Brexit now, that I don't want you to give away your material here, but that analogy that I saw you do about why somebody on the left should vote for Leave, could you just sort of like unpackage that for us a little bit?
I've never been able to reconcile the idea that you can be a socialist or left-leaning and vote for this huge pro-corporate neoliberal bloc. It doesn't make any sense to me at all. And I come from that sort of Tony Benn, Jeremy Corbyn sort of viewpoint. I don't share a lot of his views now, by the way, I've gone off him. But that kind of old-school left-wing opposition to the EU. I mean, Labour has always been opposed to the EU. And I don't know why that needs to be said, because everyone should know that. But
They're opposed to it in the original referendum.
Yeah. Exactly. And now they've gone the other way and they want a second vote. But, you know, so there's that. And I think Jeremy Corbyn is still very much a Eurosceptic and would rather we were out. But it doesn't really lend itself to... I mean, there are some awful things about the EU. I mean, we know because of the leaks that they were plotting their TTIP, you know, their Transatlantic Trade Investment Partnership. They were prepared to put that through, whatever risk to the NHS. You know, we only found out because it was leaked. You know, this is not a big benevolent. Think about the major players in the EU. They're all centre right politicians. This isn't a big left wing, liberal phenomenon. It just isn't. I mean, you've got businesses, huge corporations spending millions of pounds lobbying the EU for further regulations. They want more regulations. And the reason they want more regulations is because it basically means that smaller businesses can't compete. They can't keep up, so they get trounced.
Well, this is what I think is really odd. It's the first time in my life, and you know, it looks at this point, Brexit could be stymied, cancelled, postponed. It's the first time in my life that the political class were asked to do something genuinely radical. Because if you think about it, there's been those sort of little flip-flops between various forms of neoliberalism throughout our life. And it was and they've shat the bed. Continually, like this constant kind of 24/7 shit-a-thon. And I think that I mean, it's disappointing in a way, because you sort of, I suppose you'd like to believe that when that day come around, that there would be the talent or the foresight. I mean, one of the things that's been mentioned as well, people say, well, you know, the whole world's kind of looking at us and they're laughing. They go, there is truth in that, and obviously the Tories' way of handled it has been incompetent. But we are also the only nation currently trying to extricate ourselves from a supranational state. So the idea this was ever going to be a piece of piss and a walk in the park, it was probably always going to be a bit tricky.
Well, especially with a Remain Parliament and a Remain Cabinet and a Prime Minister.
A Remain Speaker bringing us up to this week.
Yeah, absolutely.
But John.
These people don't want us to leave, and therefore, you know, if it's like they go into a negotiation seeing it as damage limitation rather than seeing it as this incredible opportunity that it could have been. And so therefore we've ended up with a deal which is actually worse than staying in the EU. So this was never going to work unless we had a parliament which was comprised of MPs who really believe in democracy. And you see, I believe in parliamentary democracy. I'm actually really reticent to go along with the idea that we should be having referendums all the time. I don't think we should necessarily.
Yeah.
But let's face it, Parliament voted, 5 out of every 6 MPs voted for us to outsource this decision to the people. They made their decision. Then they voted to ratify and trigger Article 50 overwhelmingly in Parliament. So this is now it. This is law. And yet they're still trying to frustrate it. This is not parliamentary democracy. Parliamentary democracy is not where you just explicitly go against the wishes of the people. That's not what it means. So I think this is undemocratic.
Well, I mean, on that note, I mean, Burko finding this age of, what, 1604? So this was a parliamentary convention that preceded the gunpowder plot, right? It was before
gunpowder plot.
1 year before. And what I thought it exposed, right, was not just, we'll get onto Burko in a sec, but like, is how hypocritical. It's impossible not to be hypocritical about Brexit now, I think. No matter what your stance is, you and me included, is that because we're so tribal about it.
I know, that's the problem. I mean, Verko is, but he's on record. I mean, didn't he have a car sticker or something saying bollocks to Brexit or something?
Yes,
or his wife's car maybe or something like that. You know, his views are pretty much clear to everyone.
He's just dialed down a smirk for a start.
I mean, he's an old one, isn't he? The way he says order bothers me. I can't believe
I mean, it's a bit of a bugbear with me, but he's been clearly been workshopping that catchphrase
throughout
the whole thing.
Yeah, good for him.
There's a lot of them, and I said this actually on Pienaar's Politics the other day, is that there's this generation of politicians. It's been a long time since we've known this many politicians.
Yeah.
And these guys will be famous for a long time, because it's like the first two series of Apprentice, right? Remember that, like the big reality shows, the lineups of the first two series are the ones that really stick in your head.
Like,
we still remember fucking Craig from Big Brother 1, right?
Yeah.
So you get these like two bob players like John Bercow, who's become a star out
but
of this.
But actually, that's one of the great things about Brexit, is that it has really politically energised the country.
It's mad,
People know so much more about politics than they did 4 years ago, and they talk much more about politics. And this was why I have absolutely no patience whatsoever with this idea that people didn't know what they were voting for and they weren't thinking about it when they voted, because on the contrary, there were months and months of people talking about politics, chatting with people about politics, people that, you know, issues they never would have talked about before, getting energised, getting involved. And that's
why it's so dangerous. That's why I think it's so dangerous at this point if politics is proved to be ineffective in a way.
Well,
because we've never had greater engagement, and then also if Brexit doesn't happen, we'll never have a greater sense that we can't really do anything radical to change things. Okay, we're a few days after the Christchurch terror attack now, and that was quite an interesting few days there. I mean, it was a shocking piece of news to wake up to, but then what happened was we're also waking up to this weird phenomenon of people like suiting it to agendas. I mean, I think it was Walker, the head of the Women's Equality Party, done a tweet saying her tweet started off about male violence. Now I understand there's a place for all these debates at some point.
Yeah, of course.
Call me old fashioned. I sort of think there's 24 hours where maybe shut the fuck up and just think about
totally
people
agree,
that have lost it. I think this should be a rule. Just 24 hours, just shut the fuck up.
Yeah.
If you wanna talk in platitudes, do it. There's nothing wrong with that. Say how sad you are. But in terms of all this agenda thing, I saw some things like I've never seen before. I mean, the most kind of like jump the shark moment, I think, was where Carol Cadwaller on the left, right, used it as a reason to have a pop at Owen Jones, who I wouldn't normally find myself defending.
Yeah,
somehow managed to link it back to Brexit.
Can't bear this. I've been really genuinely disturbed by the aftermath of this. I mean, not only was the attack itself just one of the most horrific things within living memory, which by the way we all know, like, you know, loads of people obviously, like you say, the platitudes come out, this is horrific, this is tragic, etc. Well of course you would think, who wouldn't think it was? You don't need to say that, we all know that, but I do, on the other hand, I do understand
you could just tweet I'm a normal human.
The really disturbing thing about the way the media reacted was the, like you say, the exploiting this horrible situation to take pot shots at each other, to finger point, to, you know, and it was everyone. So Brexit was to blame, you know, Owen Jones. There was that guy in New Zealand, the politician in New Zealand, who blamed Islam, blamed a whole religion for this. You've got people blaming Candice Owens, people blaming Tucker Carlson, just naming their political opponents. Owen Jones tweeted out, oh, well, the last tweet that the killer sent was a retweet from the Daily Express. Implying that the Daily Express is somehow culpable for this, and the people who read it are culpable for this.
Or holidays for £9.50 are culpable.
You're contributing.
Everyone that advertised in the Daily Express.
So here's the thing about that: we can't live. It's all very well to say, you know, we should look into why have we created this culture in which someone can exist who has absolutely no empathy, no understanding of the sanctity of human life, and that is a serious consideration, and it's a very complex consideration that we need to talk about. This overly simplistic, reductive, you did it, it's your fault. Mehdi Hassan today tweeted out saying that this is his manifesto was effectively a version of Douglas Murray's book. That's a new low. That's really vile and disgusting. And the, you know, this isn't right. You shouldn't be using a tragedy to attack your political opponents. And I've never seen anything like it. I know we've had it before.
No, it's been growing. There's been certain events
it's shameless.
Where it almost, and there's a problem is the optics of it it's a very simple human instinct of I told you so
in some respects. Exactly.
Now, I can see that there's a room for that debate once a little bit of time has passed, possibly. I think the problem is if you do it with a bit while there's still people being treated at the scene, but I think you show your hand in a way.
I think you need, for a start, it will look opportunistic irrespective of your intention, so you just got to be aware of that. There is a debate to be had about what kind of culture we're creating and how we can change things so that people don't turn into these monsters. Mm. But there's going to be no simple answers to this, certainly not just naming one political commentator and saying, well, that's that, you know, if he can't say these words anymore, then we'll solve that problem. That's so simplistic, so infantile. Mm. That's not the way that you're going to affect any kind of change. And what I worry about it is actually that it's well-intentioned. That makes me even more frightened. You know, if it is this opportunism, then that's just despicable.
Yeah.
But I suspect in a lot of these cases, people, they've genuinely convinced themselves that these people are to blame. I mean, the example of Candice Owens is a very good one. The killer mentioned her as his leading influence in his manifesto. Mm. And that is obviously because he can't stand her.
Yeah.
It's obviously, and it's because she's in with a group who are pro-Israel. She's a black woman. And
that's what I'll do. I'll mention somebody that I've got to beat, like Ricky Ponting.
Mentioned someone you hate.
Yeah.
And everyone just fell for it.
He mentioned PewDiePie, right?
Yeah.
So I didn't know anything about this, but I thought, oh, this is one of these kind of names where this guy's actually really controversial and stuff.
Yeah.
So I thought I'd have a look at this guy, but he's not controversial.
No.
Has he been involved in some controversies?
Yeah, he has. It was to do with some jokes. He did some jokes relating to Nazism and that kind of thing. So he has been a divisive figure, but it's quite clear that this person was putting in references and trying to stir up. He's trying to agitate the culture war.
Right.
He's trying to divide. That's what he's doing, and it's working. Like, this is all of this blame game that we're seeing is precisely the intention.
Like this thing of not naming.
I don't name the company.
I think and people have mentioned that for a few years, haven't they?
Yeah.
Like, it's been more of a public upswell of opinion.
Yeah.
Is to, you know, just give them, like, I don't know, like a number, or even that could sound cool eventually. You know, they'll latch onto something. So
it's really difficult because we have to know about them. We have to know what's going on. But I don't
just forget them.
Don't glamorize them. Like, there was one guy who tweeted out the victims. He was talking about the victims and their life stories. That's the way to do it. Talk about those people. Talk about the people that the
heroics.
Not the evil twat with the gun. Don't make it about him. But I do understand the difficulties that, from a media perspective. How do you do that?
It is weird, just from a normal kind of, like, person like me, sort of tabloidy type bloke, where like, you know, when there have been these kind of, like, Islamic terror attacks, and I'm told, you know, don't invoke all of Islam. I'm like, got it, okay, and then, you know, when there's an attack that goes the other way, it's like, invoke everything.
That's what I mean.
It's so basic that it almost feels not worth expressing, but it's such an obvious contradiction in terms.
It's really, but that's why it looks opportunistic, doesn't it?
Well, I mean, so Sophie, leader of the Women's Party, I can't remember her name. Sound like exactly the sexist. Sophie Bird, the one's the older. But she, but like her tweet essentially.
What
like,
did it say?
It sounded like it sort of had the structure of a Tommy Robinson tweet.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? That Tommy Robinson would dissemble and try and tag on certain other agendas to it. And I thought that would probably be the last thing that she would ever think, right? And I'm not saying, for the record, that she is like Tommy Robinson.
Yeah.
But I'm saying is if you hold one person, one whole community accountable for the actions of one person, it flies against so much of liberal left thinking that I was raised on. Scarcely believable.
You have to hold people accountable for their own actions. You can't, because it effectively, like, someone tweeted out, I did a tweet about this the other day, which is probably ill-advised, but someone replied saying, individual responsibility doesn't come into this when you consider the broader cultural context. And I'm like, okay, this is, don't let this guy off the hook for this.
Yeah.
This, it's on him.
One of the things I've often thought, you know, that kind of cliche that people say, look, you know, political correctness, it's just good manners. And I'm thinking, it's not though, is it? I mean, it's so obviously not that. That's like writing, like, the team talk for the opposition.
Yeah.
To simplify something as complex that society's trying to grapple with.
But this is why I don't use the phrase political correctness. I never use it in my articles, because I kind of think, for me, political correctness, I see that as that 90s movement or that 80s, 90s movement.
By those terms, I'm politically correct.
Exactly, me too. Because I think, why should we be in a social situation or a workplace and someone can say, oi, faggot, do this or whatever. Like, that's not something any of us want. I mean, luckily, we don't live in that society anymore, but we did. But we don't anymore, and that's great. But that's why I think we need a new term. Like, this is not... it's not political correctness when someone phones the police because you have an opinion they don't like, which is now normal. That's happening an awful lot. And the police are investigating unpopular opinions. That's not political correctness. Like, if political correctness is just politeness, then I'm politically correct because I'm for that. I'm for decorum. I'm for all of that. But
the police have just become like HR, haven't they? Have you ever worked for a company where no one really gets on? And it, like, I've had this when I worked in bigger companies, and a lot of HR's business is people secretly going to HR and making complaints about their colleagues, which then get escalated. So I think that a lot of people, you know, everyone wants a bit more power in their life, but some people might think they don't have it. And I suppose, like, reporting people online and stuff has given people that maybe were too timid before to actually take on their opponents a real stealthy way.
But you know what it's like? It's like
of nipping at their heels.
It's like at school, like, because now, of course, if any kid falsely accuses a teacher of something, we know from the National Union of Teachers that most accusations are false. They know this because, of course, that person is immediately suspended, and you can immediately do that. So similarly on Twitter, you know that if you go to the police and say, well, this person said an offensive tweet or a transphobic tweet or whatever, they will investigate them, and they'll cause problems for that person's life. And to the police, I feel really sorry for them, like, because they have to do this. Yeah. Like, this has come from the top. This has come from the Home Office, from the Crown Prosecution Service. They have to do this stuff. It's enshrined. So we can say that, you know, the thing with the Humberside Police Force, where the guy investigated the guy for tweeting a limerick. And at first I thought, well, this is probably just an overzealous cop, but it's not. That's the standard procedure now. And that's really fucked up. And
it would also make crime dramas really shit.
Wouldn't it be? Like, just like a tweet.
Yeah. I mean, like, imagine, like, Taggart. Yeah. It'd be like an hour, and it would just be a guy just sitting on his phone.
Yeah.
And just getting a report. It would be so fucking lame. It's like the same thing with like drone warfare as well, or the effect of that on war films. In the future, all war films and cop dramas would just be people sitting with
robots Bluetooth heads.
Headset on. One thing I've noticed recently, and this might be different from young people, I never dream about social media.
An odd observation.
I log my dreams a lot. You know what I mean? I wake up and I'm quite...
You've got a dream diary.
Quite vivid. Yeah. I just got kind of... There's certain recurring ones and stuff. They are always like... I've got this thing, and this is a gender thing. I think like men's ones, I think, are a bit... Because like my wife and any woman I've ever been with, they're quite feeling-based. So they wake up and they go... I was in a house and you were there, but it wasn't you, and you know, stuff like that. Whereas I'm like, okay, I was a Volvo that could also talk and was a horse.
Yeah.
And stuff like real fucking weird stuff like that. So I've dreamt every variation on anything. I've never had a dream about social media. So I don't know if that's because in the formative part of my life, social media didn't exist as a phenomenon.
Possibly.
But I do think somewhere in our brains, we know this is bollocks.
Well, but also it's not our generation, is it? We didn't grow up with social media.
I remember,
it was at university and stuff, we were on the internet and stuff like that, but it was not like this, not like this. And I think this is, so it's not something, I am a bit baffled by it, but, we're in it now, aren't we? We're sort of involved. And
well, I did a, talk about backlash, I did a question time appearance a while ago and stuff, and my intention was to be, like, quite funny and playful and stuff like that. And it is amazing, like, when you see, one of the big things, like, that Twitter does give you is just a way that people that hate you, you get to see how people that hate you see you. And you don't always see them, so it can be interesting. And one of them is, like, they just all call me stupid, you stupid.
Yeah, you know what
I mean. Like, it was all basically blokes roughly my age, but more perhaps like Romani types. They just kept bringing up stupid things, and I sort of think, well, I got 3 A's at A level, so you know. So, but I tried not to
don't engage. Don't go.
I tried not to engage and stuff. But I just thought that it was like the thing is, if you are liberal, right?
Yeah.
And someone is stupid, that's one of the most illiberal things you could say.
Yeah,
isn't it?
It's like, awful. Yeah.
If they're stupid, that means they don't know they're stupid.
If you genuinely think I'm stupid, don't say it, because that's not a liberal position.
It was just so disproportionate, and I had had some of people as well. So it's often been commented on about the fact I've got sad eyes, apparently. And I sort of do a little bit. They're quite sunken and stuff. But then I went to my wife, and I was like, I said it to her, and I sort of thought she'd go, oh, that's crazy. But then it turned out that a lot of people in my life were sort of on the side of the Twitter trolls.
But so many people who go at me on Twitter or attack me on Twitter, they've totally mischaracterized who I am. So they've got an idea in their head of who I am, and they're attacking this phantom, this spectre, and they're throwing these sort of accusations at this, accusing me of believing things I don't actually believe. And yeah. and then I'm thinking, well, why should I be in a position where I'm defending things I don't believe? Well, that doesn't, it's not helpful.
Well, this is going back to this, actually, I meant to say this in our earlier chat, is one thing that you do, and this gets totally overlooked, is that you end up having like funny conversations with out and out misogynists, like proper men that really hate women, and you kind of expose them at the same time.
Yeah, well, through Titania.
Yeah, through
Titania.
All the time. So these guys are like, fuck you, dumb kind of stuff. Yeah. And you'll take these people on, you'll quote tweet them, and you'll show how they are.
Yeah.
But that part of. So it's an even handed satire.
Oh, right? I do that all the time. Like, some of the funniest things in Titania is when these right wingers, like Trump supporters and people like that, get really angry and take her seriously, and she'll argue with them, and then I'll do a screenshot of the full argument. I really love doing that because it does expose the genuine kind of misogyny and hatred that you see online, and I think that's a really interesting thing to
do. Well, that's the thing, I think modern comics sometimes get obsessed with, are you punching up, are you punching down? You really don't want to be punching sideways, you know what I mean? Like, and at all times.
I mean, I feel very much I'm punching up, because I see the woke movement as the establishment, and they have so much disproportionate power for such a small...
Certainly in our game, you know.
Yeah.
Also, you know, the occasional punch down can be funny.
Well, cruelty can be funny, can't it? Let's face it. Like,
it just is! You know. I don't know if anyone's listening and they think I'm a bastard for saying that, like... It just sometimes is.
Yeah,
I mean, like, I'll go back to the burning orphanage.
Yeah.
You know, that's
nothing funnier than a burning orphanage.
There's nothing funny, you know, that poor fucking kid. And if in the time, this going out, there is a burning orphanage, I'd just like to say, please circulate it as much as you can that I said this, because I could actually do with seeming edgier than I am.
I mean,
I get a lot of push.
That would be edgy, wouldn't it?
Well, they say, like, you're not really that shocking. I go, I never, and this is another stereotype about the right, I never committed to being shocking. I never said I was controversial. That's the whole point. I don't think I'm controversial at all.
I'm literally
a centre-right bloke.
I haven't done controversial comedy for ages. I don't think, but I'm constantly told I'm trying to be edgy. Is Titania even edgy? I don't even think she is.
If you look at the cohort of people that would find Titania funny, so it probably is. It's a lot of people probably on the centre right, like you say.
Yeah.
Trump supporters might misinterpret it. There's probably a lot of people in the middle. There's probably there's just more people generally that would see the joke of that.
Yeah.
Than wouldn't. And do you know what we've done here as well, which I think is interesting. Like classic comedians. Well, we were talking about a great terror attack, and we've come back to speak about us. That is how we.
Oh, we're so narcissistic.
That is how
that's
we know
fucking
that
terrible.
We're comedians. So in this little section, I'll say that what most people think is that. Well, certainly what my wife would agree is that comedians can always make it about them. So, Andrew's joining me for the bit of bollocks.
Is that what you call it?
Just a bit of bollocks.
A bit of bollocks, okay.
Yeah, exactly. I really think hard about these these title and these items.
I've got
thank you, fuck you. That I came up with that.
Nice.
Just on my own.
Yeah.
Just called thank you, and then bam, it was an item. And a bit of bollocks is that I've got this bugbear of, you know, when you've got your phone and stuff and you want to show someone your phone.
Yeah.
And you just hold it out for them. You just want to show them something on the phone.
Yeah.
You're not giving them the phone. Then they grab the phone.
Yeah.
Right? And then they start swiping happily left
and
right. Like, what the fuck are you doing? That is my life there.
You can't do that with a gay man's phone. Just don't.
Oh, really?
I'm just warning you. Just don't do that. That would be a big mistake.
Yeah.
You know, there's some just friends who've fallen foul of that. They grab it and
they deserve
down.
That. If they just see just like a massive cock, like that probably is what should happen.
Well, then I think everyone should put just random pictures of massive cocks throughout their photo album. So if someone grabs their phone, they'll get what they deserve. That's my justification.
It is a massive shout, because it's kind of like, it's just like a fucking, it's like a data breach, isn't it? Because like, you're literally saying, here's this image.
Yeah.
This I've already shown you, this is what I'm willing to show you. I've got my claw hand on this. And they just grab it. And that anxiety, and it's weird, because like you think, well, what have you got to hide, Jeff? And I don't really have anything... I mean, like, I think what it activates is that natural paranoia that humans have. You know, like when you was at primary school and they would go, right, like, somebody has taken a shit on the hamster and we're going to say it. And there's a part of you as a kid going, look, I didn't do it, but I feel like I might have. Is that a personality type thing?
I mean, it might even just be like, you know, things on your phone, messages you send. Like, if you're joking with a mate or something, and then someone reads that message out of context, they'll completely misunderstand what you're saying, and you know, you'll start to feel like, oh, maybe I have said something wrong, maybe I have done something wrong. I don't know.
Is it like, does it activate that same thing? Do you get beer fear?
What's
like,
beer fear?
You know, like if you drink heavily, we need to come up with a phrase for it.
What is it like?
Well, it's just a paranoia.
Like, oh God, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, but
like, so you wake up the following day, and then you presume that you must have been the worst of the human.
Oh no, We had a phrase for this at university. We called it the pigs. They'd say, like, have you got the pigs this morning? What is this image of these? You wake up and there's these pigs sort of nudging at you, saying, you did this last night. What did you say? What did you do? And and I think it sort of sums it up for me. Like, I get that all the time, even if I've behaved impeccably.
You had smarter friends than me. Well, you've gone for the pigs, this kind of, like, I've gone for beer fear.
But both work, don't they?
It's strange. Where does that come from in the human condition? Like,
For me, it comes from Catholicism, I think. Like, the guilt thing. I sort of thrive on it. I think that's what it is, but... Yeah, the worry that you've said something bad, done something wrong, isn't it just as well the wish to be liked? You know, if you say something that you've messed up, you've misspoken, you've upset someone, we're none of us like that.
No, this is what's interesting. So both of us are kind of like owning up to this being quiet, because some people just don't suffer from this, right?
They don't give shit, do they?
So it's amazing. They just wake up and they go, I can't remember anything from last night. Well, mate, what am I like?
And I scrutinise every last thing I said.
And it turns out usually you're all right, aren't you? Have you ever had that occasion where people go, no, you were awful?
Oh, yeah.
Like, yeah.
God, absolutely, yeah.
It's, oh, really? Yeah.
Yeah, have you not?
Oh, yes. The worst one I had was I was out in Ibiza with the missus, and there was a couple, right, these two lads. We went out with them, we had a good night with them, and then we met with them again the following day, and 2 days later, and I was pretty smashed again. And then my wife said, oh, this is like Kiko and Fernando, which sounds like two cliched gay bloke names, but I promise you, that really was their name. And I said, no, it's not. And she was like, no, that's definitely them. I was like, nope. So what is happening here? It's the most surreal thing.
Yeah, right?
To be introduced to two people and then
to refuse to accept
them. No,
identity.
They're not them.
Wow.
I basically said they weren't them. I didn't say they were liars.
You just weren't having it.
Yeah.
Did they, was there
well, anything? They were just like, do you know what my wife did, right? So we got this with the system, and it's quite, I recommend this to people, is with your partner. You in a relationship at the moment?
Yes.
Right, yellow cards. So your partner, if you're getting leery, he'll just give you a nudge and go, that's a yellow. That's a straight yellow.
The trouble is that I had a code with a friend of mine when I started teaching, because part of my instinct is to be mischievous and just to say what I think you're not meant to say. And he had a phrase, stonewash and whitewash, and one of them meant curb it, and one of them meant go further, push it further.
Oh, really? Oh, that's good.
And he used to push me.
I like that.
Yeah, but it got me in trouble a few times, you know.
So which one's which?
I think stonewash was... calm it. You're actually causing trouble here. You're going to get beaten up. And then whitewash was push it even further.
See, it's interesting, isn't it? Both of us are people that worry, like, in that situation.
Oh, yeah.
And yet here we are, right, both to varying degrees, putting ourselves out on social media and doing exactly the thing where the large swathes of people will think that we're bad people.
I don't get it. Like, because I don't like confrontation and I don't like much attention.
Right. It's really weird.
Why the hell am I doing this job?
Is it like, because people often say, right, like in comedy, and I get it sometimes, they go, well, are you a character? And I think, well, it just shows how kind of like narrow your view is of things. Like, we go, well, there's, you know, someone who's doing comedy that doesn't think exactly what I think, they must be making it up. Always think it's kind of more telling for them. But the truth of the matter is, all comedians are taking, like, there's nothing I've ever said that I either don't think or don't think on some level, right? I've never just straight up made up anything. But, like, you have, like, passing thoughts, you know what I mean? You think, that's funny that I think that. But the big things, you know, how I vote and all that is totally straight up. But, like, I think all comedians, there's that bit here that you almost think is the cool bit here. You go, that's the fucking guy. What most people think. I'm 42 now. Like, what I find is that the only times I tend to go out and drink and stuff like that is in a small hiatus between busy periods. And... well, long story short, I just need to stop because... In March of last year, late February, I went out with a mate and it was literally... genuinely, in my mind, I thought, I'm going out for a pub quiz. Just a couple of pints, right? Now, this sounds like the oldest story of the book, but the problem with this night was it then snowballed. And literally, it cut to 7 a.m, I was wrestling my mate in the snow, right?
Yeah.
Remember when it snowed at that point, spring of last year? I was wrestling him, and he ended up with like a broken nose. And I don't think I did it, but I, you know. So we talk about beer fear. The following day from that, like, I woke up to the WhatsApp group with all those lads because it was only me and him that ended up together. And he had a broken nose.
And was that definitely you?
No. I think it was just the process of us wrestling. But two fully grown men.
I know exactly. This is it. It's undignified, isn't it?
I hate the idea of shaming myself in public. But then, you know, I go on Question Time and say,
no, you were great on Question Time.
I was all right. Yeah,
that was good.
I did okay. In the end, like, in terms of, like, you know, you shouldn't talk about this stuff here, but numbers, you know, we both know what that means, right? It's that it was productive in that sense, but I was gutted because they did get to me. I hate to, I don't want to be the kind of fuck you comedian, but they got to me. There was just enough people calling me a thick fuck. That I did
so
go,
does it upset you like when you get all this?
That one time it did, because I was ill when I did it, so I felt out on a limb.
Yeah.
And then when I read, I should, probably shouldn't be arming them now, but I'm out the other side, you shit. I am a bit thick sometimes, but that's part of the USP.
Just go off Twitter for a while. Like, just before this interview, some Guardian columnist did a quote tweet about me slagging me off. And I know when I turn that phone back on, there's going to be like hundreds of people just piling on. So I'm just going to literally scroll to the top of it and ignore the fuckers.
It's that feeling. Do you remember that about a year or two ago when Ben Affleck was promoting that awful Batman film, and there was that video, "Hello Darkness, My Old Friend"? It's just temporarily that feeling, isn't it? Like, I'm getting coated off it.
But
you do tough it out. You know what I mean? It's very temporary. Feeling,
I think easiest way, if you want to be a comedian and you want to have a good life, don't have an opinion or don't express a genuine, sincere political opinion, because there's always going to be someone who hates you for it.
This is the problem, Andrew, is that I genuinely want everyone to like me.
Do you?
I have a set of opinions in the comedy world that are naturally just going to piss people off.
I don't want to annoy anyone deliberately. I'm just saying what I think.
I don't want to upset anyone. Like, no, I mean, like, as a person, if you met me, but then I do things and then you suddenly realise, do you ever find sometimes it's the one, and particularly I'm interested with Titania, is it the one that you thought was the mildest thing you've ever said?
Oh, unbelievable.
Do you know what I mean?
What
is, you got any examples of that? Because I did something once, it was about, about funding and stuff in the budget.
Yeah.
And I said something that probably was a bit kind of gammony type kind of, I was like, why don't we give these kids money to, you know, do tech startups or something like that, and I thought it was incredibly bright. And then, some kind of like youth blogger or something, she quote tweeted me, and took the bit. And then all these millennials, all these snowflakes just climbed in on me, and all the things I said that I thought would offend them. It was the cliched idea that they all had a tech startup in them that was more offensive to them than anything I'd said
before.
That's the
thing that bothered them.
Yeah, and it was been a whole day of these kids going, just piling in on me.
I just never try and anticipate. I mean, some of the things that I've tweeted, I don't think are offensive at all. I mean, the one that got her banned, you know, she got banned for a day by Twitter, I thought was completely inoffensive and not an issue, but apparently it was an issue. It was something to do with she was going to a UKIP march to punch UKIP voters in the name of tolerance. And that's obviously a gag. You know, it's a bit of a throwaway one, actually. Yeah. But that got a ban, so...
Well, it's nice to round up with Titania. Like, you refer to her as her. Like, you know, when you talk with Iannucci and Partridge, Coogan talk about Partridge, like their fondness for the character.
Yeah.
Do you have that now? Like, do you feel sort of like... Is it growing like... I mean, she's obviously started off as someone like that was kind of like... your bit noir, I can never say French stuff, but
well, they only started it 11 months ago, and it was because do you remember there was that character Godfrey Elphick on Twitter?
I do, yeah.
He was a brilliant satirical account which was run by a friend of mine, Lisa Graves, who ran it with another guy, and they had this account, and it was just, it always used to make me laugh. And I'd said to Lisa, you know, I'd like to do something like this, I'd like to do a satirical character. So I came up with this, and she said I should just go for it. So I came up with this radical slam poet intersect, because I also like the idea of writing really bad poetry, and
that's always funny.
I love doing the sort of radical bad poetry, and so I just did that, and it just sort of became a thing, and then I started to really enjoy doing it. So I have seen her as my partner's really worried about this, because I keep talking about her and things that she's done.
Well, the way you just said that was totally like she was a person.
Because I know what she's like, and I can see her and I can hear her.
So obviously, I don't want to.
This isn't dissociative disorder or anything.
No, I don't want to go into like the kind of psychoanalytic. But obviously, there's. I think it, you know, I think that over time, you know, if you bring it to life and stuff, is there that chance that you sort of feel? Because they say they are protective of Partridge, aren't they? Like they feel kind of. Like, do you have this empathy with her?
Yeah, totally. Because, like I say, I think so much of the woke movement is really well intentioned. I think a lot of these people, they really want to change the world for the good, and they see injustice often where it isn't there, and sometimes where it is there. But the key thing is that they want the world to get better. but they're just fucking it up and making it worse. And that's the that's
and
the,
that's
that,
funny.
Like, that is quite funny.
Yeah.
But it stops being funny when they're, you know, when they're generating exactly the kind of resentment that the far right depend upon to recruit people to their ranks. That's when it stops being funny.
Yeah.
And so I do want to, you know, I always think this about satire is it's not just ripping the piss in the way that we do as comedians. It is trying to change something for the good, trying to identify something wrong with society and doing something about it. And that sounds really fucking grandiose, doesn't it?
No, but
that is sort of what it's about.
No, I think it's a nice place to kind of like bring the chat to a close in a way, is that it's coming from like, you know, like an empathy, you know, like you know, you're not seen as a bad person, but also like, you know, trying to help her.
Yeah, exactly.
In a really patriarchal.
very patronising kind of.
It's weird.
You know,
so you're trying to Henry Higgins the shit out of her, essentially.
I am basically mansplaining. Yeah, look, it's exactly. I'm completely undermining myself here, aren't I? But yeah.
No. Listen, man. I think it's just a brilliant character, and it's great. Like, you know, there's a lot of negativity about like new media and social media and stuff like that. But this is a new way of doing character comedy, and I think there's a lot of people enjoying it. And the book Woke is out now. I think it's in all sorts of bestseller lists and stuff like that. And it's just going to be a fun book. You should buy it. You should read it. And Andrew Doyle, thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you.
And pass on a little wink from me to Titania. I'm sure she'll appreciate that.
Cheers.
So this week, it's come up in the previous two episodes, but talking about anxiety, right? I've got a theory that it's the thing that freaks blokes out the most. Yeah, because it's that feeling of, and I mentioned this before about loss of control, you know, fight or flight. For whatever reason, you suddenly get this flood of adrenaline and you think, fucking up, somebody's going to fucking kick up. Like, you're just sitting having lunch with a friend and you just feel like you're going to set fire to a bin. I don't know why I said a bin, but just something, right? You just have that sort of like inner rage and fear bubble up inside of you. And you just have to sit there, don't you? You have to sit there like nothing's happening. We don't, a lot of people listen to this, we go, but Jeff, you don't have to, you could talk about your feelings. But I'm me, right? So imagine you're me, you just got to sit there like nothing's happening. It's a game of sort of emotional poker, isn't it? Where you're just trying to keep a blank face and not give away the tumult. And I just think it is different for blokes, isn't it? Like, because if you're, certainly when you're in a group, right? If you go out with a group of female friends, if you have like a funny turn, you know, if you just had a funny turn, you just, oh, that just felt a bit weird, I just need to sit down, the girls be, no, you get to sit down, do you want a glass of water, are you all right there, Kate, you know, you're all right. Whereas if it was a bloke, it was a group of blokes, and you went, oh, just had a funny turn. I mean, even using the phrase funny turn could lose respect for you within the group for 5 years. So, like, listen, your mates might be, oh, all right, you know, they probably feel a bit burdened because that's what men are like, quite selfish. We'd sort of be wanting to give across the impression of sympathy, but thinking, fuck it, what's he playing at? You know, there better be something wrong. The issue is one of the fears comes from not knowing why you feel like this, right? Because there's no direct correlation. It might be completely irrational. The situation that's made you feel anxious might be the fact that you're eating a butternut squash wrap, right? And I don't know why it's a butternut squash wrap. Now, the problem is there's no connection really between circumstances and anxiety. It's not as easy. If you're depressed, you go, oh, I'm fucking depressed. Do you know what I mean? You know, I've been here before. It's obvious. I'm sad, so I feel sad. Whereas anxiety, you're like, what the fuck is it? Right? And I think it is probably sadness. That's the problem. And it comes up in you, like in your subconscious, and then you're fighting to keep it down. And it just rears up. Do you know what I mean? If it was cricket, it would be just a bouncer that just got big on you. Just not even like that short of a length. How to exclude as many people as possible. Do a cricket analogy, Jeff. Yeah, it's like the 1987 Down Under Ashes series when Philip de Freitas was bowling to Craig McDermott. This is probably part of the problem that I always recourse to cricket analogies. But something that got big very quickly and felt like you were losing control, right? So this is the point, is that your underlying emotional state is already ticking over at quite a high rate. That's the point. So you maybe you're already like a 9.2, yeah? So you're already at 9.2. You're just trying to keep a lid on it. And then kind of like you momentarily, when you're out walking the dog, you can't see the dog for like 2 seconds. You think, oh, fuck, the dog's gone, fuck it. And then the panic comes on. You think, well, that was odd. It was just a 2 second period where I couldn't see the dog and I lost my mind. But maybe it's not the dog that you're missing. Yeah. Maybe it's the inner dog
in you. I don't know why I'm going with this. I think I've made the point. So what can you do about it? A lot of this stuff is fine to just identify it, but if you can't fundamentally change it, it's redundant, isn't it? I would say the one bit of advice that I got given that I found was quite useful, particularly when it came to anxiety, is the paradox of acceptance, right? Which does sound like the next James Bond film, doesn't it? The paradox of acceptance. Mr. Bond, I see you've been having panic attacks. Why would the person speaking to Mr. Bond sound a bit like Sean Connery? Doesn't make sense. But, you know, a lot of these franchises do bring characters back, like Spock in Star Trek. See, this is the problem. I'm trying to talk about serious issues. I end up talking about cricket or James Bond or science fiction or KFC. Look, I've got issues, okay? But what I'm saying is the paradox of acceptance is simply this, that the moment you just accept that you feel something, you take a big percentage of the power out of it, right? Rather than sitting there having a bit of a panic on, getting a bit of a bead on, just go, yeah, fuck it. Yeah, I do feel anxious. Yeah, it's just how it's going to be for now, you know? Just, it's not going to kill me. I'll just sit with it. You know what I mean? Just tolerate it. Tolerate it like a prick at a party. That's what I say about anxiety. Just yabbering in your fucking ear. Just think, yeah, well, run out of energy. He'll punch himself out. Adrenaline often does do that as well, which is one of the good things. So just think, yeah, I'll just sit this one out. You know, I'll bat out for the draw. So there you go. I tried to avoid cricket analogies, but in the end, I couldn't help but tie it up with a cricket analogy. You know, sometimes you want to be out there looking good, making shots, hitting boundaries, but, you know, sometimes it's just about survival and there's nothing wrong with getting... I'm just losing listeners, aren't I? The longer I talk about cricket, there's just particularly any international listeners. Okay, it's like a sport that you know where you defend. There you go. Okay, that is the end of this week's show. So please subscribe, listen, rate, recommend, do all that stuff. It helps, man. It's getting this podcast out there. If you think this is something that is worth people listening to, all those things you do help it go to other people. We might be able to get more guests. And look, what I'm getting at is one day I might make money out of it. The good thing about being a Tory is I can fucking admit that. Now, I'm going to read out some of the internet reviews, the iTunes reviews. One from Lazy Ass Clown. Interesting opinions that can actually make you laugh. Also, if you write something nice, he might read it out. There you go. I did read it out. And this is from Ed McTed. Is that your real name, Ed? I hope it is. That's the Scottish. I'm fucking Scottish. Hey, fucking Ed McTed, you wee cunt. Sorry, that was a bit strong. I'm going to do the whole accent here. I'm an SNP voting Scotsman who loathes Westminster politics and has nothing good to say about Thatcher years or present Tory party. So it's not a great start. Jeff, though, is funny and worth listening to. I like his men's section. I bet you do. This podcast is easy to listen to and may make younger people think. I know I've changed accents here, but I'm happier at the bit of Scotland that I've arrived at now. His chat about old-time comics was good. Keep it up, chum, and all the best for the tour. I fucking like that bloke. Do you know what I mean? Immediately, all I want to do now is have a pint with that bloke. So if you put reviews, there's every chance I'll read them out in episode 4, which will be around in 2 weeks' time. Thank you very much for listening. What most people think.